So that's Andy. Andy lives at the end of the road. Andy had a car accident 20 years ago, probably, yeah? Total mess. His whole face was burnt off. They reconstructed it. He's had 14 operations on his leg. It's all pinned together. They want to cut his leg off now. His foot. He's in so much pain. But he wants to work. He's got this fantastic work ethic. And he says, I'm a worker. I can't. I'm not just going to sit around. So he's got tremendous spirit. He's on the chainsaw. So we think of. So you think about, oh God, damn chainsaw. So that's one perception, and then you get the other perception. Well, this guy's really knocked up and banged up, and he's working hard. And your perception changes to compassion. It's really how the mind works, huh? Anyway, this I thought I'd introduce Lompo Liam here. He's on the right. He's one of our most beloved and respected monks, and he's the monk that Ajahn Chah asked to become the abbot of Wabapong, of the monastery that Ajahn Chah was. And he is he's a very inspiring, to say the least, monk. He's sort of contemporary with Ajahn Sumedho. So this would have been what year? I think this is around 1969. So he taught, and this is his bio, this is some talks from his and some of the biographical material about his life. And so the previous pieces are about all the difficulties he faces, and he used a lot of asubha meditation. Asubha meditations are meditations on the unbeautiful. Asubha is beautiful. Asubha is unbeautiful. So he did a lot of cemetery meditations, a lot of corpse meditations, and a lot of skeleton meditations, to such a strong extent that he could visualize a skeleton. Why do that? Because he used that nimitta. Nimitta is a kind of sign that you develop in meditation. He would use that as a sign to stabilize his mind. So that always gave him the stability of the mind. So when his mind got caught up in sensual desire or whatever, he'd go back to the nimitta to calm his mind. So there's a whole prelude of his practice which leads to this. Where should I start? On the 11th, Lompo experienced another change, namely a great peace and happiness returned to his mind. In all four postures there was clarity and gladness. Simply being by himself was very pleasant. Nothing could intrude and stir up his mind. External objects impinging on the mind just couldn't reach it. When working together with the monks and novices during chores, although he was together with others, he felt the same as if alone. He wasn't interested in what they were talking or chatting about. He couldn't be bothered to think much about what was happening at all, and when the chores were finished, he simply went back to his hut. The next day passed with the ongoing happiness and peace continuing, as if it was a normal and ordinary experience. Now, this didn't come by him, sort of just hanging about and playing Grateful Dead tapes. This has come about through considerable effort and meditation. With unceasing attention, Lompo continued to look at both his mind and the objects of his mind. When the evening of the 12th approached, he started to question himself, why do we actually practice? What's all this practice for? And the answer arose, and these are Lompo's words now, we don't practice for anything. We practice for the sake of practice. Whatever it will lead to doesn't matter at all. Our duty is to practice. So we practice and try to maintain mindfulness and awareness with it. In each moment, we keep teaching ourselves. Whatever we are doing, we try to have mindfulness and awareness. Whether we are walking to or fro, we keep everything in a state of perfect balance. Finally, I felt I had done enough walking meditation for that day. Because I became quite tired, and my feet already hurt very much. The bones of my feet felt like they were piercing through the skin, as I had been walking the whole day and night without rest. You got that? This wasn't a 35-minute sit. This is a man, like, really putting effort forth. It is normal to experience painful feelings in the body if we overuse a single posture. And it's all day, all night he's practicing. But it is also normal that feelings change again. So I thought, it's really enough walking meditation for today. I went up to my hut, put on my robe with the right shoulder open and the outer robe folded over the left shoulder, sat down facing east, the same direction as Lumpu Cha's hut, thought of my teacher, and started meditating. And this is the commentator. The meditation was very peaceful, and the same reflection as before came up in Lompo's mind. We don't practice for anything. We practice for the sake of practice. This is Lompo's voice. Keeping this teaching in mind, I kept on meditating. Normally, I would sit meditation until about 11 or 10 p.m., and then stop to have a rest. But on this day, I continued sitting for about 8 hours without moving or making the slightest change in posture. You got that? You know, it just sounds superhuman. The feeling of peacefulness shot up and pervaded throughout the whole body as if something were taking hold of it. It felt cool, a coolness that suffused the whole body. So very cool. An experience of the whole body becoming completely light and at ease. The head felt so cool the whole day and night as if there was a fan blowing over it. Cool, peaceful, quiet, and still. No experience of thoughts at all, and no clue at all where they had disappeared. Everything silent completely. It felt totally quiet. The only experience left was that of utter peace and stillness. The body felt tranquil, cool, and light. This experience continued on throughout the whole year. You got that? This experience continued on throughout the whole year, not just for a day or two. In fact, it has continued unchanging for many years, all from that one go. There's the state of coolness as if in the brain, whether sitting or lying down, coolness in every position. All worries, concerns, or similar thoughts from the thinking mind are totally gone. Thinking in this or that direction ceased, all quiet, just like a forest where there isn't the slightest sound of any bird singing, truly quiet. No wind blowing at all, just ongoing tranquility and peace. It feels like there are no sankharas, no proliferations of the mind. All the suffering that arises with kilesas that had bothered me before, the kilesas concerning the other sex or other kinds of ambitions that I had before, I don't know where they all disappeared. Seeing somebody, I just had the feeling of seeing it as absolutely normal. To see a person as simply a person, just that much. No beautiful persons, no ugly persons. People simply would be specifically the way they were. This is the kind of peace and tranquility that arose. I don't know what it was, but I also didn't care what it was, always knowing it is like this by itself in just this way. It is like this through peacefulness and tranquility. There isn't anything to be concerned about as far as how various things exist. As concerns dukkha, I don't know what dukkha is like. As concerns laziness, I don't know what laziness is like. Questioning myself about laziness, there wasn't any. Questioning myself about dukkha, there wasn't any. The feeling inside my heart was exactly like this. I tried to recall and pin down that which is called dukkha. What is it? I really don't know. I only know how they discern the meaning in terms of conventional language, because dukkha is just something created by common conventions. When the mind has no dukkha, all conventions whatsoever don't exist in the mind. And the experience of this feeling has lasted on continuously all the time since then. There has been no change all the way up to the present day. The same state still lasts on and has been stable, continuous, and without changes. So it is possible. So we're going to do an 8-hour sit. Now, why read that? You know, that can sound, I don't know, like this is impossible. But I think it's, I mean, it's, well, you know, I have these pictures just to introduce you to the family. But it does, this path is one that, like from my monastic side, yeah, you have to put a lot of effort forth. And I think you have to be interested in the mind, not self-obsessed, just interested in consciousness, and hopefully inspired by the idea of enlightenment, of Nibbana, of something, you know, profound in the human heart, that is possible. And I think that, for me, reading this, among many things, how it affects me, that a lot of the trivial things of life become less important, the kind of trivial things that we can get all uptight about and worried about and concerned about. You think, yeah, but what's really important? How should I put effort forth? What should I direct my life to in that way? And then do as much as, you know, we're able to do. And you can see it's not just like some kind of personal growth thing, right? It's a spiritual endeavor, and there's a spiritual aspiration there in our lives. And these beings like this are rare, you know. They're rare beings, but they do exist. And for me, I find that inspiring, that this possibility does exist, and we can work towards it. As the Dalai Lama said to the Christians at a meeting with the Christians, he said, "You Christians have it difficult. You have to do it in one lifetime. We Buddhists have it a bit easier. We can do many lifetimes." And you'll find that perspective much stronger in Asia. We don't have it in Western culture, but people from Asian culture much more think, yeah, Lompo had a lot of barami. You say, you have this idea of accumulated virtue, that someone had a lot of accumulated virtue coming into this life. And you can see he was very gifted right from the start. The downside of that is people say, "I don't have any barami to meditate." Right? So use it the other way to make an excuse. So we all, you know, we all have capacities and challenges and, you know, different things that we face. And no matter how difficult it is, that to keep in mind this aspiration, I think is very, very important. And just to plant the seeds, just kind of keep doing what you can, right? I got a letter from Ajahn Kusalo yesterday. This is called Kusala Sala, which is a tribute to his work. I'm going to get a picture out there as you come in. But he's just had a really, really bad flu. So I think we can empathize with that. And at the end, and it sounded really bad. Like, he was really down. The other monk is down there. And at the end of it, he says, "Last life, no more. No more of this. I don't want to go through this again." So let's do some sitting.